Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Ladies and gentlemen, the show is about to start in 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
He'll be fine on the mountain.
It's time for Inside the Gamecocks, the show built by the Barnuminium Company, served by Chicken Cock Whiskey, and part of the Chief Sports Network.
Touchdown, Carolina! Touchdown, Ace Sanders! Pressure, and he just dives in!
Sherbert, Phil Mullinax, and Jamie Bradford.
All right, greetings and good morning. Welcome aboard and welcome home inside the Gamecocks, the show, live from the Signorama Studios, the preferred sign partner of your South Carolina Gamecocks, Signorama.com, located in West Columbia, South Carolina. It is Gamecock owned. It is Gamecock operated. Our friend Matt Vaughn dresses it up pretty nice, doesn't he, around campus? You can have your business dressed up as well. They do everything. Literally, they'll wrap cars or wrap golf carts. They'll get your signs. If you're a realtor and you need new signs, whatever it is, maybe you're hosting a golf event like the Big Spur did just last Monday. Signorama.com, built by the Barnuminium Company. If you're going to build a home, you might want to use one of the nation's best builders, and they're very affordable. The Barndo Co. is what they're called, the BarnuminiumCo.com, and served always by Chicken Cock Bourbon, where you can find that on our Chief Sports app. You can find Hale McGranahan here early. Phil and myself will lead us off. JC will join here in just a bit. Coming up at noon, head baseball coach Mark Kingston will join us ahead of the East Tennessee State game tomorrow and a trip to Missouri this weekend. South Carolina continuing to improve in the RPI after they were victorious over the Kentucky Wildcats this weekend by winning that series at Founders Park. So looking forward to talking with him. But always looking forward to talking with Hale as well. Gamecock football, it's a little bit quiet right now with the transfer portal window winding down and summer upon us. But that's generally when you become the busiest, Hale. They recruit over the next couple of months, and that'll probably be the storyline for the Gamecocks. What's up, man?
Not a whole lot. Just sitting here waiting for this portal window to close and see if there are any other departures from the roster as well. So not only do we have the whole guys coming in, there's still that whole guys leaving and going elsewhere. So that's happening to you right now.
Yeah, what are you hearing on that? Do you anticipate any more entries?
I haven't heard anything real recent. I shared on the board last night that when I spoke with JC last week before the golf tournament, that he mentioned a few names to me. And I don't think any of those guys who he named have entered yet. And I don't know if they will or they decided otherwise. I mean, it's always – I shouldn't say always, but it can be a fluid thing. Like, I heard plenty of names over the years since the portal was a thing, and those guys ultimately didn't go anywhere. I mean, one of them was Xavier Leggett a couple years ago, and obviously he stuck around. So we'll see if any of those handful of guys pop in. Like I said, not sure if anything's changed with them, but nothing real recent, and just kind of sitting around waiting to see what happens.
Yeah, it's a lot of teams are doing that now, Hale, and they've continued to adjust the portal windows. Like every year, I feel like for the last couple of years at least, we've seen some adjustments. Have you gotten any feedback from the coaches at South Carolina as to how they feel about it now with the windows where they are?
I'm sure there are some differing opinions within the staff, and it's probably like that all across the country. I mean, you could ask 50 different college coaches what they think, and you might get 50 different opinions about that particular matter, or really anything related to the game. But they just see it and go with it. There's not a whole lot that those guys can do other than complain or adjust and adapt and try to keep your nose above water.
Well, that's true. It's not worth complaining about, at least publicly. Maybe they'll get it straight behind the scenes. So wide receiver obviously is a position, and I know that in the VIP room last night you put some nuggets on it. I guess we've given it due diligence, so we've given it enough time for people to get in there and read your notes. But that was certainly a position throughout the spring you discussed this. I think it's even been mentioned maybe by Beamer kind of passively that they would probably be interested and intrigued to sign a guy or two out of this portal window that could come in and help that position group and, of course, ultimately help the team. What is the latest on prospects with the wideouts?
Yeah, and a key element to that has been trying to find some guys with some height and ability to go make plays downfield in the vertical passing game. Maybe want some one-on-one type situations, and a potential guy who fits that criteria is Delvon Campbell from Nevada, who visited on Friday, and it was less than a 24-hour visit. He was in Friday and flew out early Saturday morning, I think, and he's 6'4", 218 on the Nevada website. And if you look at his stats, I can't remember exactly what they were last year, but he led Nevada in receptions, yards, and touchdowns. He only had two touchdowns. They only won two games last year. One of them was a 6-0 win over, whoever in the Mountain West. So it was not a good football team, but he was a productive player. And the handful of highlights I could find on YouTube, because there aren't many. And I think maybe some of that is because if you type in Delvon Campbell highlights on YouTube, you get a lot of Dan Campbell clips of the Lions. So you see a big guy who can attack the ball downfield and make a play, certainly will high point it at 6'4". And as we all know, that's an area where this receiver group lacks at South Carolina. So if they're able to get him, I think South Carolina's in a good spot. Oklahoma State has hosted him for a visit. I don't know if he's going to go anywhere else. He's been in the portal for a couple weeks now, so – we shall see. Like I said, I think South Carolina is in a good spot for him. And if they're able to close and get him, that would certainly address a need, not only from a position standpoint, but, profile, height, weight, all that. He's a big guy, and I think he runs pretty well. He ran track in high school. I don't think he's a burner by any means, but I think he can stretch the defense a little bit and go up and make a play.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah. They were pretty bad. Let's see. This is how many points are scored going game by game here. 14, 6, 24, 24, 9. They put 27 on the board against UNLV. Nice little interstate matchup there. 6, as you mentioned, at San Diego State. 6 to nothing. 6 to nothing. Oh,
yeah.
34 versus New Mexico. Man, fireworks are starting to kick in. And then 14, 24, 20, and 6 versus my adopted Wyoming Cowboys. Yeah, offensively they were pretty bad, but he did lead the team in receiving 7 of those 12 games.
And I'll add, sorry to cut you off there, JB. No, I think he was first in the Mountain West in yards per catch. I think it was over 19. Mm-hmm. He had a bunch of big plays, like 40, 40-plus yard plays, 30-plus yard plays, good numbers there. But when you're not on a team that's not very good, and I think the whether it was a ranked team or a Power 5 team, in those three games, it was like Southern Cal, Fresno State, and somebody else. He had like three catches for 60 yards in those three games. So essentially over nine games, he did a lot of his work when this team wasn't too overmatched by the opponent.
Yeah, so this guy, he's been in college since 1998. No, I'm kidding. He's been in college since 2019. I mean, obviously he redshirted.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. Sorry.
Well, I'm getting at here is he's got a year to play. Hale, is my math right on this?
Yep. Okay. Sorry, I was literally like reading more into him because I didn't have a lot of time over the weekend. I went to a wedding and was getting sort of reacclimated back to work yesterday. So really digging in on him this morning before I got on with you guys. And anytime I have seen a guy who's a super senior transfer, you know, 1 year to play type of guy, I'm always wondering, how old is this guy? Is he 24, 25, whatever the case may be? He's actually only 22.
You got to be kidding me.
He played – so he started at Illinois in 2019. He was 17 years old that season. Didn't turn 18 till December 5th, which is a great day in the world. It's my birthday, my sister's birthday, and his birthday. And it's also the day that Shane Beamer found out he was going to be the head coach at South Carolina. So there's a lot of fun little events that have happened on December 5th over the years. But yeah, he's a young guy. He should have been in high school when he was playing his freshman year. We could call him Jake Bentley if we want to.
Yeah.
So he's not some super old guy who's, you know, really, really maxed out. He's young for his grade. And I think there might be some ability to tap into, whether it's South Carolina or Oklahoma State or somebody else. I think somebody might be getting a pretty good player.
Where do you think things stand right now between him and the game?
I think things are in a good spot. I don't know for sure. Okay. Which way he's leaning, but I think South Carolina's doing pretty well. Like I said earlier, I don't know if he's going to visit anybody else, but South Carolina or Oklahoma State appears to be or to the two right now. Arkansas, I know, was in the mix some. Maybe he'll visit them again. I'm not real sure what that might look like.
6'4", 218, the exact size of O'Trey Smith, and the reason I know that's because I coached O'Trey. So very proud of O'Trey Smith, who's now the wide receivers coach at Wando High School. All right. Also, elsewhere, we've got. So, I last night, I'm assuming this young man, and I'll let you state his name and the situation, but a young man visiting from Florida State, a transfer wide receiver. Give us the latest on him, starting with his name, of course. But then also, I noticed something in your report, and I was just curious because you don't see it often. He had a meeting with Chance Miller. Is that normal for the associate AD to pop in there and?
Yeah, we've seen that a little bit here within the last couple of years. He's obviously very involved with all things related to the athletic department, so. I can't speak too specifically to what is shared in those sit downs or what kind of questions are asked or what's discussed. But there have been some guys over the last couple of years who have had meetings with Chance, and I think it's kind of viewed as a way to address the overall vision in the athletic department and give sort of that perspective of things. Because when these guys are in on their official visits, whether it's South Carolina or anywhere else, they're going to meet with not only the coaches, obviously, but training staff, equipment folks, just all the people who are support staff, ancillary type figures for you as a football player. Those folks are involved, academic support staff, nutrition, just everybody you can imagine. And in some cases, if things work out or if folks want to meet with these particular types of individuals on their visits, those meetings are scheduled and they happen. So I think maybe what stands out about this particular one is just one guy who's visiting and not, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9, however many guys do it. I think we'll probably hear about it some in the summer when they have all the high school guys coming in June. But yeah, to go back and answer your question, yeah, it's not uncommon. They've done it before, and it's not like a new thing.
Okay, and so this is Vandrevious Jacobs.
That's right,
coming up from Florida State. What do you like about this young man? What do you know about him?
I'm still trying to dig in on him. That's probably what I'm going to do after I'm done with you guys. But I think the folks at Florida State liked him as a player and think he's got a lot of ability. I mean, he's not that 6'4" type of body type like we were talking about with the other guy and what South Carolina needs. But I'm thinking that Jacobs is just viewed as a guy who's probably too good of a player to not take a swing at and see if you can bring him in. Because whether it's, again, somebody who's 6'4", a guy who's, you know, 6 foot with long arms, like, if he can play, like, I think they probably want to try to still improve that room, regardless of how big or not big he is. So I think he could add something potentially if it plays out that way.
All right. So I'm trying to find out here. It looks like he only participate in 3 games this past year? So he's got a full slate of eligibility. He was just a freshman in 23, and that technically is a redshirt year because he didn't play in over 4 games. So he's got 4 years.
Yeah. Four years to play for. A real old school type of way to look at it. It's kind of nice being able to have some clarity with that and just figuring out how many games they actually played in, and that's all you got to contend with. But yeah, he's full slate to roll, and I think would immediately contend for playing time. I think everybody knows how good Florida State was last year and know they're pretty solid at receiver with Keon Coleman and Johnny Wilson and Jaheim Bell catching the ball as well. They had a lot of experienced playmakers ahead of them. So he was sitting around kind of waiting his turn last year. And for whatever reason, he's in the portal now, and South Carolina is definitely in the mix.
All right. Elsewhere, Hale, I've been meaning to ask you this question for a while, just out of curiosity. Joe DeCamillis, of course, if anybody saw him during the spring game, I don't want to say he's a lot like Sean Elliott necessarily. Maybe he is. I don't know. But he's a little bit of an older guy. He's been around, obviously, as a special teams coordinator in the NFL for, what, 2 decades or something. But he is pretty animated. He's all over the place out there. But sometimes coming from the NFL to college football, you know, there's a little bit of a transitional period where you're having to, and it's a different game. You're having to go recruit. You're walking into the homes of these kids. You don't do that in the NFL. You know, you sign contracts. The administration takes care of that, and you coach what you've got. But here, he's having to get into all these recruiting meetings and go meet with players and all those type things. Have you learned? Just out of curiosity, I don't even know if you've asked the question, but have you learned anything about Joe DeCamillis and his transition to college football and how he's handled things like recruiting compared to being a coordinator in the NFL?
Yeah, I think it came up a little bit after he got hired, and it was just one of the standard questions. I mean, right now he's out recruiting, and some of where he's headed are to the areas in the low country in South Carolina where Pete Limbo was the area recruiter. And I know he made some stops there yesterday. He's up in Charlotte today, looking at some guys, and he'll be around Columbia looking at some guys. And when I say looking at some guys, looking at specialists, that's how he's going to recruit for the most part, because that's how the staff is structured. Is yeah, there are some areas, and they'll have coaches hit their areas regionally from a regional standpoint. But when you're talking about the special teams coordinator, he's going to be out evaluating and really recruiting kickers, punters, long snappers, just like Dowell's going to do at quarterback or Clayton White's going to do at linebacker or whoever else coaches whatever position is going to do. So that's what his MO is going to be. And when you're talking recruiting as a special teams coordinator and recruiting specialists, obviously those are different types of guys. Like kickers and punters can be a little weird, maybe. So I think he'll do just fine. Not to say he's a weird guy, but as far as him getting acclimated to recruiting after not doing it for a vast majority of his career, I think he'll be okay. He seems like a personable guy, and I think it'll be interesting to see how it plays out, because if you look at this specialist situation, South Carolina is probably going to go after one, I would think, with Kyle Kroger getting ready to play his final season. I can't remember for sure how much eligibility Alex Ferreira has left, but he's been around for a long time.
Yeah.
So I think Jody's got some work to do, just given the way the roster's made up. And you're always looking for long snappers. You don't want to run into a situation where you don't have any guys like that. So whether it's offering a guy or not, or bringing a guy in as a walk-on, which this staff has done in the past, he's going to have some boxes to check and some roster spots to go looking for.
Joe D is what they call him in the building. You can watch Gamecock baseball, Gamecock football, and anything in between on Palm Casual Furniture. If you're going to be on your back porch, the outdoors at your home, Palm Casual has got the best guarantee out there. 30-day money-back guarantee, like hand you the check, not tell you that we'll get it to you in the next 6 months or give us 90 days or whatever it is. Nah. As Aaron tells me all the time, he owns all the Palm Casuals in South Carolina. You can party on it for 29 days and return it on the 30th. Now, let's be real. Like, don't be like Hale and spill a keg of beer on it and then take it back and say, well, it was white and now it's brown. I can't figure out what happened here. You don't want to do that. But you've got time to make sure that it fits right and fits comfortably. PalmCasual.com, Bluffton, Myrtle Beach, Somerville, Mount Pleasant. Folks come from everywhere. There's a reason for that. They are the factory. That helps keep prices down and helps put guarantees in place. PalmCasual.com. Any more feedback on some of the visits from the spring game?
No, not a whole lot. Haven't spent much time here the last week or so digging in on that. Been trying to close the book on spring practice itself and turning the page to the portal. But they did have a bunch of those guys on campus, 2025s, 26s, even some 27s, but not a lot.
All right. What exactly have you been closing the book on from spring practice? I did see you put the numbers up last night, the spreadsheet with the roster, which is at what, 83? So if they sign two wideouts, they'll be at the limit, right, of 85?
Yeah, that's an unofficial number. So things like that, trying to make sense of the roster, where it's at from a number standpoint, that 83 is based on the assumption that guys like King Dominion Ford and Peyton Mangrum and I think one or two others who got the Jake Pana scholarship. I don't know necessarily if that's a year-to-year thing for some of those guys. So there might be more numbers to work with, could be less. It's very unofficial. But, yeah, just closing the book on things like that or looking at – wrote about the offensive line and trying to figure out, okay, who's really competing at left tackle, left guard, center, right guard, right tackle. Like, how did things look throughout the spring when the media got to go in? How did they look during the spring game? Just things like that that maybe try to put a bow on it and figure out how maybe it'll segue into the summer, then ultimately preseason camp and the season.
I think I counted it just a little while ago. Is it 13? They have 13 offensive linemen. Is that correct?
I believe it's 15. I just counted them 14, up. But 14. Maybe 14. It's 14. It's 14. Somewhere in there. Because Shane said at the end of spring practice that they were down a number. Like, but they have a certain number of scholarship guys they wanted each position. Mm-hmm. He said they were one below their number on the offensive line. And the number on the offensive line is either like 15 or 16.
Okay.
So I don't know if he was counting Sidney Fugar, like if he already knew Fugar was leaving, so he was already taking that out of the equation.
Yeah. Very well could have been. Okay. When you list it the way that you do that I'm looking at here, it puts stuff in perspective. I know that you don't have all the all of their years and eligibility next to them. Clearly, we know the situation up front on the defensive side of the football. A large majority of those guys will be most likely moving on at the end of the year. But like when you look at the offensive line and you look at how many young guys are on the talented but young. I mean, Thompson, Franks, Pringle, all young guys, Shivers, Babalade, Marquis, all still very young guys. Kason Henry, technically still a young guy, although he feels like he's been around here a while, going through all the injuries and things like that. I mean, it's interesting, Hale, when you look at the list, because we never look at it from a list form and then watch it on the field. You know, you kind of, it takes seeing it to kind of digest it a little bit, if that makes sense. What does that tell you about the future of that position? Granted, the transfer portal doesn't at some point in time, you know, tear it apart. But when you look at it and you see all the youth there, what does that tell you about that group?
Yeah, they've been able to stack a couple classes in a row, and they're trying to do it again in 2025. Their 24 group, all three of them were on campus for spring practice, and the 23s, two of the guys who played the most, didn't get in until the summer, and the most talented one, a lot of people thought, was Marquis Anderson. So,
yeah,
it's like a nice group of six or seven young guys who are obviously going to need some time to develop. But if you start trying to project down the road, which is hard to do with the portal being what it is, but you start looking a little bit long term, it's reassuring the direction where that group's headed. And we haven't always seen highly ranked offensive linemen in the state of South Carolina from a recruiting standpoint. Like it's been pretty rare where there's been cycles with more than one 4 or 5 star type of offensive lineman in the state. And last year there were a few.
Yeah.
The year before that there were a couple, and there are going to be at least one here in 25 with Shed Surratt from Gaffney, who a lot of people are high on. So yeah, it's a good time to recruit in this state. I said it a few years ago when Beamer staff first got going that I thought it was a good time to recruit in this state because it's got some talented players along the line of scrimmage, and maybe some of it hadn't panned out for various reasons on the defensive side of the ball, but still, so far, it looks pretty good on offense, and there's some more to come down the road. So I think it's overall in a good spot from a long-term standpoint.
What are your early thoughts? This is JC, by the way. I'm in. Early thoughts about the 2026 class in the state. On paper, Hale, I mean, gosh, whatever Xavier Thomas's class was, what it was, 2018, that class on paper could have held had so many kids not gone to IMG,
right?
As a deep class. But this one, just as far as known guys go, though, I mean, you got the receivers from Columbia, you got two offensive linemen, and the kid from St. Stephen and the kid from Rock Hill. You got Currents up at Rock Hill. You got the tight end from Abbeville.
Yeah.
Already.
Newberry.
Newberry. Already, you know, and then, you know, more to come. So what's your thought about that as far as maybe 2026 being a resurgent class as far as numbers in this state?
Yeah, I guess my initial reaction to that, JC, is there's probably going to be some more guys who pop up along the way because that's usually how it happens around here. Guys start emerging their junior years or in some cases their senior years.
Senior year, yeah.
Xavier Leggett, perfect example.
Agreed. Yeah.
So it's already really talented, and they're just sophomores. And South Carolina's offered like, I don't know, 8 of them, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was.
There's a quarterback. There's a quarterback that Gaffney's got now who started his career at Ben Lippin, who transferred to Gaffney, Javon Gilmore, who's pretty talented guy. So and I think he's gotten a couple offers already. South Carolina has not, but I think he's got some. So yeah, it's got the makings to be a really, really good group. And those receivers from Columbia, like you mentioned, JC, Donovan Murr from Irmo and Jordan Gidron, Ridgeview, tight end at Newberry. I don't want anybody at Newberry to be upset. So shout Please out Newberry leave. With Jamel mm-hmm. House, who I think is a really good tight end prospect, and the running back at Broome, Jalen McGill, who's
– I forgot about him. Yeah.
I think 24/7's got him underrated right now. I'll be the first to say that. I think that needs to change. He's really good, and all the offensive linemen. There's a running back at Gaffney, Jaden McDowell, who's a little undersized as an SEC type of running back, but he's pretty electric with the ball in his hands, and he's going to play college football somewhere, probably.
And then
Power Five at the end when it's all said and done. What was that?
The other O line at Gaffney too. That's got the Tennessee offer. I forgot about
Scotland Dover. Yeah.
Yeah, yes, you got Gaffney, and then you got the kid from the Low Country or St. Stephen, and it's Timberland, right, where he's from, and yeah, then you got a kid at South Point, you know. So that's a lot, and we haven't even gotten really over into the PD region much at all, if you think about it. And that's been where a lot of the talents come from. I do think this. I'll say this about the state: as the population continues to boom, and it is booming. I mean, South Carolina is on a trajectory to where there's going to be 7-8 million people living there in the next decade.
That's when I'm moving to Alaska, just so you know.
I get Wyoming. You already got Wyoming staked out, brother. But no, it's I do think it's important for the state, kind of like the state of Tennessee, as they kind of experienced a big growth spurt, for that number to get back towards 2025 Power Five guys a year. And it was that way in the mid 2000s. I don't know if Clemson's ascension and focus on out of state sort of maybe took some eyeballs off of it, because the NFL draft numbers have remained the same. It still produces a lot of NFL draft picks. They just go different routes or go to Carolina. I don't know if what that caused the higher rated guys to go back, maybe, you know, recruiting personnel and people not knowing where players are. I don't know, but I do know that there's a lot less, the state goes a lot less deep than it once did. But I think as the population continues to grow, it's pretty obvious that needs to happen. Otherwise, somebody needs to figure out why if it's not. Are they doing something at the high school league level that's holding them back, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't know, but I think that's important for the state in general. I don't care what school you're at, who, you know, if you recruit South Carolina and you care about sports in South Carolina, I think it's important for us to start seeing those numbers come back in pretty big fashion. I mean, I'd like to see this state, not necessarily South Carolina level or SEC level, but Power Five level, 20 to 25 deep, because it's done it before. And I think it can do it again. I mean, the numbers show that. So I think maybe it starts with 2026. And I think it's a good thing.
Hey, let me ask you about a quarterback in that 26 class. I don't get too wrapped up in 2-3 classes down the road, because I just hope that I'm alive when these guys actually get to campus, wherever they end up going. But it does. It always stands out when you see a 6'6", 200-pound quarterback like Javon Gilmore at Gaffney. What tell us about Javon Gilmore, or Javon Gilmore. I might be saying that incorrect.
Yeah, I think probably people need to also consider that South Carolina's got a 2026 quarterback committed right now, and Landon.
Yeah. Oh, I don't mean it in that. I just he's a 6'6", 200-pound quarterback. There's not a lot of those out there, you know.
Yeah, he's obviously got those measurables, and he looked pretty good as a freshman at Ben Lippin. I'll be interested to see how he's progressed and gotten better, and how he'll do against, you know, 5A competition and not Skeeza. No offense to the Skeeza folks out there, but I think they would even admit that can be something that the good players at Skeeza, if they're going to be college prospects, are going to have to overcome at some point. He's got some athletic ability, and I think he throws a pretty decent ball. I think he came to a camp last summer at South Carolina, so they're very well aware of him. He's definitely on the radar, and they've seen him throw, and they're going to see him throw again this week, as we noted on the site. Dowell and some of the other coaches are going to be at Gaffney later this week to watch them practice. And he'll be among the guys that are there to watch, whether it's him or some of the offensive linemen or McDowell or anyone else that Gaffney's got. They're going to be pay attention to those guys. And I think probably Mike Furry being on staff
probably helped.
a resource that you want to make sure you're ready to utilize if you feel like that you need to. So he's definitely on the radar. And my comment, JB, was more, I see someone saying he should have been offered 3 months ago. But, you know, Landon Duckworth, who's really good, has been committed since last August. So,
yeah,
they got to get to the finish line with him. But they're certainly keeping their options open and paying attention to guys.
Yeah, and again, you know, these conversations are so premature. It's April 30th of 2024. I mean, we got a long way to go. But, I mean, I guess that's part of the reason why I asked the question, because Landon Duckworth is coming out of Jackson, Alabama, and as JC has pointed out 1,000 times, and I think you've probably pointed it out 1,000 times as well, it's pretty difficult to go in and get and then hang on to top prospects from the state of Alabama, let alone quarterbacks. I mean, there's a couple pretty good programs over there named Auburn and Alabama. I think we're all aware of that, right? So they got to get to the finish line, and I don't ever want to call any kid, especially an in-state kid on this show, I don't ever want to call anybody a backup plan. I don't mean it like that, but I was just curious, when you have a 6'6", 200-pound quarterback in your state, even though you have somebody else committed, like you just pointed it out. You got to get to the finish line with this guy. But if you don't, you don't want to be left, you know, empty-handed either. So I'm really intrigued by how they handle this process in recruiting these days, and especially in a scenario like this, because this is – I don't think Carolina's ever recruited a quarterback from the state of Alabama. I mean –
Smelly from Alabama, and he an Alabama name.
Chris Smelly's and you see what happened. I mean, he transferred back to Tuscaloosa. So it's just it's interesting. I don't know. I figured I'd.
Well, I think it is too, JB. I mean, that's You sit there and you take a kid that early from that state, and you know what you know that state. We all know that state. It's like South Carolina's a lot like Alabama light. I'm convinced if they had more beaches and we had more places like Montgomery and Birmingham, we'd have the more successful teams. I think, you know, it's just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week there. The great ones don't leave. And he's a potentially great one. He's not, I guess, 95th in the country. Not that I put a lot of stock into any of the high rankings right now, but I mean, hell, he's a player. He's a ball player.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like him a lot. And kind of to your point about the South Carolina-Alabama comparison as states, if you guys think about it, Greenville, not just the city, but Greenville County as a whole, is typically not the best high school football. I mean, I played high school football in Greenville County. I know what it looks like around there. And for a long time, there haven't been a ton of good players to come out of there. And it's either Greenville or Charleston has the most people in the state, right? So when your biggest – one of your biggest metro areas isn't producing more than a handful of guys at the very most in the course of a recruiting cycle, you're already kind of handcuffed a little bit.
That's changing a little bit in Greenville.
I would give the nod to Greenville. I mean, I don't mean this disrespectfully to any of my friends here where I grew up in Charleston County, but football down here ain't very good. It's just
I didn't want to say it, JB. I didn't want to upset.
It is what it is. I mean, Charleston County's done this to themselves. It's not the coach's fault. You know, it's not the player's fault. It's the county's fault. They've done nothing but stand in their own way for 50, 60 years. That's why they hadn't had a state champion since Middleton in like 1983. I mean, it's a joke how they hamper all these programs. And then you go to the upstate, and we're getting off on a tangent here, but you go to the upstate, and I know what you're saying, and you're saying it very respectfully, Hale. But also you go to Dorman, you go to Spartanburg, you go to obviously we know it's in the Rock Hill area, but I'm trying to Gaffney. Get more west here. You go to Gaffney, you go to wherever. I mean,
even places like Greer or Woodruff.
Yeah, they do everything they can to invest in football in these small towns. They still rally around it. You don't have that down here. I mean, it's not even what it used to be in Somerville. As great as Somerville, you know, used to be, and people try to say that all the time. Oh no, wait. Well, Somerville, when Stratford won state championships, yeah, Berkeley and Dorchester County. That's not Charleston County. So Anyways, we'll spend all July talking about that. But no, I 100% agree.
I think that's probably the difference. You know, I said beaches, but I think that's probably the difference is Alabama players do come out of Birmingham, the whole deal. Columbia is a basket. Quite frankly, it's a basketball town. You know, Columbia puts out its share. You know, there's no Mobile in South. That would be Charleston, and there's no Mobile. Mobile puts out more players than anybody else in Alabama. It's right there on the I-10 corridor with Louisiana and all that. Your pockets in South Carolina now, or Horry County, because it's growing like a weed. The Carolina Forest, Socastee, Conway, Myrtle Beach area, fastest growing place in the state. The football's good in the PD. They like it. And then Rock Hill, which is also part of a fast growing metropolitan area in Charlotte. I think Greenville's emerging. I think Spartanburg has dipped a little. They do invest in that county, though. And then outside of that, it's your Orangeburgs, your Bambergs, your little, like we outlined with Xavier and all the receivers, Calhoun County. It's one or two guys at every one of these, Marion, you know, every one of these little schools. And I think as the football gets better and as the upstate becomes a metropolis, and I think it'll get better there. And I think Charleston, if it could take a page from some of its surrounding areas, could do better as well. But, you know, obviously there's some things that happened down there on the coaching scene last year that weren't really, I guess, I'll call them non-winning moves. How about that? But
well, they don't pay enough, JC.
Yeah. Like, yeah, you got to invest.
I mean, well, like, you know, behind the scenes, what was going on at Wando.
That's what I was referring to.
Yeah, what Wando was trying to do, and they absolutely 100% could have done it. But Charleston County, they don't pay anybody, and it's just embarrassing what they do. I mean, it affects everything. I mean, it's a joke. Hopefully somebody in Charleston County hears me and gives me a call and gets mad at me about it. Look at yourself in the mirror. I mean, it's insane. But anyways, hey, we don't want to take we got to get running here in a second. So we got to get an early break with Coach Kingston coming. But I do want to get, we mentioned the offensive line just a little while ago. Those guys blocked for Spencer Rattler the last couple of years. You've interviewed Spencer Rattler and been around him countless times. We all heard this false, ridiculous narrative about why he slipped in the draft, which clearly really isn't true. So I want to get your thoughts on that. Going into the fifth round, but going to New Orleans and being in that organization and your experience of being around Spencer Rattler and his time in Columbia.
Yeah, I think there's been some other reports since that stuff came out on Saturday, I guess it was, about why Rattler slipped. And I think some of it were some folks around the NFL who pointed out that with all the guys who were taken in the first round so quickly, that maybe that just showed that the teams who really were looking to go get a quarterback who could start this year, for the most part, who could start this year, took him in the first round, and then everyone else just wasn't in a big hurry. I think the New Orleans situation is awesome for Spencer, and I think he's going to have a chance to put himself in position to maybe be the successor to Derek Carr and maybe have a long career there. Obviously, he'll have to perform well, but it's set up as such that it could be a really good situation for him. Mm-hmm. I'm sure he would have loved to have been drafted in the first round, second round, third round, or fourth round, but he fell all the way to the fifth. And, you know, unfortunately for him, it's going to cost him financially. That's just the reality of it. But as far as the situation, I don't think it could have been much better. I thought maybe a team like Atlanta would have been great for him, being behind Kirk Cousins, but then they did what they did for some reason. Las Vegas, I looked at Las Vegas the same way, and New Orleans was another one. Seattle would be up there too in my mind. So, yeah, I think he's in a good spot. New Orleans is a great town. Anyone who's ever been to New Orleans probably had an awesome time. And if you've been to a Saints game in the Superdome, which I have, it's a college atmosphere in there, and it's probably a really fun place to play. So I think he's in a good spot. And I had nothing but positive interactions with Spencer. I mean, he was obviously really buttoned up from the time he got to South Carolina, and I'm sure was doing all he could to make sure his image was as good as it could possibly be for this past weekend. And whether or not that really cost him, I have my doubts, because I think most people in the NFL who are doing this stuff do enough digging on guys and figuring out their backgrounds to have a pretty accurate assessment of where they are, not just based on something they heard about the guy in high school. I thought that was some of that was a little bit BS, and didn't necessarily buy into it either. Whether it's right or wrong, I don't really think that was the reason why he dropped to where he did. I mean, he certainly wasn't a perfect prospect, and had his reasons for why he was going, you know, in the third round in some of those mock drafts. But at the same time, like, you know, Bo Nix had a terrible career at Auburn. Michael Penix wasn't a world beater at Indiana. You know, J.J. McCarthy only threw the ball like 12 times a game at Michigan this past season. So, like, none of these guys are perfect, but it's all in the eye of the beholder. And for whatever reason, the Saints didn't think they needed to be in too big of a hurry to take him, so they waited till the fifth round.
Yeah. Couldn't agree anymore. I think hopefully somehow, some way, Spencer Rattler is starting by whenever it is later in the season. That would be neat when the Saints visit Charlotte to go up there. There'd be a lot of Gamecock fans that decided to buy tickets to that one, wouldn't there? With Rattler and Clowney and Horn and Xavier Leggett and DJ Wonum, Jamie Robinson, who actually transferred out, but I guess he's playing with the Panthers now, from what I heard. Be a bunch of Gamecocks in that game. It'd be pretty neat to see, and a bunch of contributors as well. We'll let you run on that note, Hale. No Shane Beamer press conference today. So I don't know. Go eat lunch.
Sure.
Did you do something that normal humans do? I'm not. What do you do? Right. Like if me and JC and Phil weren't working today, whenever I'm not on the air, I'm like, damn, I can actually eat lunch. This is crazy. Maybe I'll go to a restaurant or something.
Yeah, I saw Quantrill ask in the chat. I'll close on this about Quay Dodd, the defensive end from Eastside High School. Shout out Eastside, class of 03, right here. Yeah. I don't think South Carolina is in a big hurry to make a move on him. He's been to camp. Sterling Lucas, I think, is supposed to go by the school later today. I mean, he visited. Dodd visited during the spring, so they're evaluating him. But I think Dodd's got a long way to go before he's worth getting a South Carolina offer. He's long and athletic and got some ability, but as a player, he's not quite there yet, in my opinion.
Clean it up.
Yeah,
perfect. Thanks, Hale. Have a great week, man.
See y'all.
There you go, the great Hale McGranahan. Play a little golf too. And we were happy. It was great to see him last week up there at Fort Jackson. We got Mark Kingston coming up right at noon, so we'll hit an early timeout here in just a couple of minutes. JC was in late because he was wrapping up JC and Morgan, which is part of the Chief Sports Network, available for free on the Chief Sports app. What'd you talk about, JC?
Oh, we had Bill, I forgot about Tanner Bailey. We can talk about Alabama quarterbacks. Yeah, and see, he went back home too, to JB's point, and didn't even play ball anymore. We went through kind of like the collective bargain. I'm sorry, the antitrust legislation or lawsuit that's coming down, and that's probably going to be settled, and that's going to change a lot with college athletics because there's going to be a new structure that comes in as part of that settlement. And I think we're going to see some sort of revenue sharing before everybody goes and pulls their NIL money. That's not NIL. They're still going to need NIL because there's this thing called Title IX, and NIL is going to probably be used to, I don't want to say work around that, but reward market value to players. And we all know market value, you know, is determined by who the player is. It's not determined by everybody gets the same. It's very capitalist. So But I also think that NIL is going to have some in-house components to it, and there's going to be a greater ability to work together and all that. What stinks to me is this could have all been avoided had the NCAA, you know, decided that, oh, it's okay to have your own camp and make a little money. It's okay to have your own YouTube page where you cook and monetize it for fans. It's okay to have your own T-shirt line. If they'd have just done that, it's okay to get paid for being in this video game. We saw how much money was that? $600 a player. You know, they really did this. They really caused all this commotion over $600 a player.
Yeah.
And, you know, so, you know, $20 million out of each athletic department, that's a lot. As far as how it's going to affect South Carolina, honest to God, I hope it doesn't happen, but wouldn't surprise me if a sport is eliminated because of it, or two. Just and everywhere probably, because you know where you do have a lot of money flowing in, all that flows out. So we talked about that. We did a little five and down. We talked about Apocalypse Now, and the movie Fear with Mark Wahlberg and Reese Witherspoon.
Mm-hmm.
So that was that. It was good. Y'all can check it out. It's on YouTube now, or you can get it on Spotify later.
Fantastic. Fantastic. We got to go. Mark Kingston up next right here on ITG, the show.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
Charleston Fitness Equipment is keeping South Carolina in shape. Clients have come from all over the Palmetto State to find that one piece of equipment that they enjoy that keeps them looking and feeling good. Whether it's a home rower, treadmill, elliptical, free weights, a home gym, or something else, Charleston Fitness Equipment keeps the mirror smiling back at you. Get in shape like the Gamecocks do. Visit CharlestonFitnessEquipment.com. Gamecock owned and operated and proud partners of Inside the Gamecocks, the show.
The preferred sign partner of Gamecock Athletics is Signorama Columbia, and they should be yours too. A full-service sign company that handles design, production, install, and service, Signorama Columbia has helped to bring to life the perfect vision for so many all across South Carolina. Owned and operated by proud Gamecock alumni, they can handle all types of signage, including interior and exterior, vehicle graphics, and more. Go to Signorama.com and find the West Columbia location, or call them at 803-407-9284. Bring your brand to life with Signorama Columbia and go Gamecocks.
Cold Joe here, and when I'm not eating average jambalaya or celebrating endless summer in Destin, I like to eat pimento cheese straight out the bucket. Mmm. And the only pimento cheese I like to eat is from Nana's Porch. It's award-winning, it'll melt in your mouth, it's good on a cracker, it's good in a bowl, it's good on a piece of bread. Also, don't forget, Nana's Porch has a hell of a food truck. It's award-winning as well, and they're here for all of your catering needs. So get online, nanasports.com. It's good. Coach O signing off. Endless summer, go Tiger.
For chicken cock, we get a medium to medium plus toast. The char level, we use a number 3 level char. If you char too deep, you start burning away some of those flavor components that you just created. If you just char a barrel and you don't toast it, you're going to create some of those flavors just on a thin layer, just inside the char, but not the actual depth and full extent of flavors that you're going to get if you toast it properly. All those elements, that's exactly what they do. They boil down to great flavor.
If you're in the real estate market in the Lowcountry or even in the Midlands, please contact me, JB, with Coast to Coast Realty SC. Go Gamecocks.
This break is presented by Billy G's Carolina Barbecue, the state newspaper's 2023 winner for Best Catering, Best Barbecue, and Best Food Truck. Visit BillyG'sCarolinaBarbecue.com for all of your catering needs.
Ladies and gentlemen, here it is. Mike here for one of the better dining options in the capital city. You know, when I first moved there, I asked people around the radio station, where are the best wings? Well, the consensus was D's Wings. That was then. Today, they still have the best wings, but it's so much more now in their new location at 415 Meeting Street in West Columbia. Yeah, they get voted the best wings on a routine basis. Yes, they get voted the best sports bar on a routine basis, but they're not just about wings, and really, they're not just a sports bar. It is a family-run local restaurant and bar with 20 TVs and 25 beers on tap. And how about these daily specials? Every Monday night at D's, you've got 75-cent wings from 4 until closing. Tacos on Tuesday. Then on Wednesday, 18 wings and a pitcher of beer for $29. You've also got ribs and oyster bucket specials on Thursday. And no matter how big the party is, 20 or more, no problem. Just call ahead of time and they'll take terrific care of you. They'll do takeout as well. And guess what? A human will answer the phone and take the order. Billy and his staff do an outstanding job. Check out D's. 415 Meeting Street in West Columbia.